The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. Rainy Bogota, the rains have returned. How short was that summer, folks? This is episode 239. I hope you've enjoyed the previous episodes. We've had some good news stories about Colombia recently. We've had Jenny Levitt and her cooking book. We've had The Legend of El Dorado and their successes in Caldas. And this episode 239 is another good news episode for Columbia Calling. We are sitting down here in a cafe with photographer Gabriel Eisenband, who's originally from Barranquilla, but he's got a great story to tell. This is a guy who has pursued his dream in photography. He left behind, let's say, the corporate world of marketing to then be the author of perhaps the most important book this year, 2018, certainly for the next couple of years, that details all of Colombia's national parks. And he traveled to a grand majority of them to photograph. So welcome on Columbia Calling, Gabriel.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for having me. Really, really appreciate it. And big hello to everybody who's listening.
That's perfect. Now, we in Columbia Calling, we like to promote Colombia. We like to talk about the good things. Good things, bad things. But you know, Colombia's got a justifiable reputation. But this is a good thing. But to go through, I mean, how many of the national parks did you actually cover to take to photograph?
Well, it was a pretty fun experience. It took me almost 2 years to visit 42 parks that are featured in the book by me, and but I'm still working. I'm still working because we are hoping that the book does well, and I'm continuing to visit some of the parks that I couldn't visit during the time frame that was given to us for the project. So in total, I've already covered 45 of our 60 national parks.
That's an incredible amount. I mean, the geography that needs to be covered. I've been to Chiribiquete.
Yeah.
I know how big that place is.
Yeah.
I've been to, obviously, the obvious ones, Tayrona, Chiribiquete's out there. Where else? Amazonas. So Amacayacu. Where else? I mean, but a tiny, tiny Chingasa, the ones here close to Bogota and so on. But I mean, it's huge. Talk about the logistics for some of these places. These aren't, I mean, they exist on a map and only in the imagination of many Colombians. I mean, what would you say to Colombian or foreign listeners out there was the most difficult one to get to and photograph?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me think about it a little bit, because for the most part, trips sometimes could be long and could include, you know, flight planes, car rides, boat rides, donkey traveling. But I didn't find any real difficulties in getting to them, unless we think that is a difficulty, you know. But it's just that you have to be able and you have to be prepared to to go long. It's not just, you know, getting on a plane and getting off of a plane and, you know, finding the place a couple of hours away. Some of them require this kind of logistics. You know, you get out of a plane, you meet with the people from the park system, and you take a car to some rural area and you board your donkey, and you're 4 or 5 hours on top of the donkey, and then you get to the place, and then you have to see, you have to start searching for the places, or, you know, that you want to shoot.
And as a photographer, as a professional in this field, do you have set things that you look for, or you're just like, or suddenly the image, you see it before you, it captures your gaze, or is there something, I've done too much of one thing, I need to balance this? Is there something that sort of defines your photography?
Well, I do what I call, or what is called, expressive photography. It's not documentary photography, so I don't go to places and shoot a bunch of pictures and then select from 200 pictures, you know, the best ones, you know? So I go to a place, and I try to feel the place, and then I look for, you know, certain singularities of the landscape that, for me, express the spirit of the place. And then when I find those, I wait for good light. So if I capture one or two good photos per day, then I think it's a successful day. That's a successful day for me. And yeah, of course, you know, you think of a place, you read of a place, and you say, oh, I want to do this and I want to do that. But, you know, then reality sets in and you arrive at a place and it's raining or the light is not good, or, you know, you don't find what you were thinking of. So then you have to let the place dictate a little bit what it wants you to show.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's one of those things, as you say, you let it dictate. I went up not so long ago to Sumapaz, and within seconds the weather changes.
Yeah,
either you're in the mist, you're out of the mist, the sun is shining. And also, I think of not only the high altitude, I mean, Sumapaz at over 3,000 meters, but when you think of places at jungle-type national parks, I think the first park I ever visited, bizarrely, in 1998, was Sankyanga, which is kind of off-limits out there.
Very.
It's that humidity of the jungle and the mangroves. These aren't easy to photograph.
No.
These aren't easy to capture.
Not at all. And especially mangroves, jungles, and forests are, you know, the most difficult landscapes to capture, because it's very hard to organize that kind of scenery into a cohesive and organizable shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sometimes there's photography that I find is too busy.
Yeah.
There's too much going on in a shot. I mean,
right.
do you find that you have to sort of step back sometimes and say, listen, no, that's just too much?
It's one of the mottos, it's, you know, simplify, because of course you are in the jungle or in a forest or in a mangrove and you can feel the place with all your five senses.
Yeah.
But if you want to translate that feeling into a photograph, which is only two dimensional, you know, you have to really work with what you have in front of your eyes and the light that it is. You have to organize it and, you know, find the right light to showcase the scenery. So yeah, simplify is very, very important and very hard to do, especially in those types of scenarios.
Definitely. Now, you have a whole team, I suppose, when you get together and the logistics and so on. So let's say that you'll hire a local boatman or a local guide to get you to this place. But how many people, more or less, will go with you on one of these expeditions?
That would depend on each national park. And for me, the less is more, because I want to, you know, I want to be basically alone with the place. You know, you can't just be alone, because it's the jungle out there. You have to be with somebody, so you can get to places and you don't get lost. But for me, the least, you know, for me, if I can be only with one person, that's good. But that depended on each national park and the logistics that we arranged, which with each of them. What I usually do is I call, for example, Chingaza, and you know they know we are going to do this project, so they are ready, and they say, okay, you can come in this and this date, and if you want to go to the mountains, you will need this, you will need a donkey, and we want two people to go with you, and that's how we usually set things up. And when we went to places with sea, but of course we needed a boat from the map, from the park system, and basically that was that. But my team was usually kept very little, one or two persons per national park.
Well, I like that. It's a low impact as well for you know, you're not coming with 15 people traipsing through. Well, you know, one of the old Tarzan movies where they would go through the jungle with, you know, 25 workers or so on. And when you're out off in these places, what I find interesting and something we'll explore in the next segment of the show is that, you know, a lot of these places, we think of them as national parks, but they're also, they've got, you know, let's say colonos, people living down there, people who've moved down either through displacement or to take advantage, or baldíos or whatever. I mean, there's all sorts of politics involved in that, and we won't get into it. But you might be hiking through the jungle for however long and then find some, you know, a hut and someone, you know, with their crop of yuca and their papaya and a couple of head of cattle. It's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, do you ever happen across things that you don't expect like that? You're finding a community that's been lost?
Well, it's the rural part of the country, so everywhere there's people. Everywhere there's people. And to get to the parks, you have to, you know, to pass through cities, towns, and small villages. So there's always people involved. But there's a line.
Yeah.
There's a line that once you cross it, you don't see anybody. And you don't see, you just see the mountains or the forest in front of you. And that's what I looked for my pictures, you know, so we could show that part of the world that's, you know, unspoiled by the hand of man, and that, you know, that you can feel that if you were transported in time 500 years ago, you would see the exact same thing. And that's the feeling that I wanted to convey for the book in my images.
So this book is the, you know, Parques Nacionales Naturales de Colombia, so National Natural Parks of Colombia. It's out in English and in Spanish. It was released on July 20th, so it's hot off the press. I mean, how does it feel? First of all, I've got one question before we land, but first, before we get into that, what do I want to get into? I know there'll be listeners out there, a lot of amateur photographers. I've had professional photographers on the show before, but how did you end up getting into photography, and how do you score a gig like this one?
Well, that's a nice question. I've been in photography since 1993, a couple of years now. When I got my first camera in Barranquilla, and I started shooting street scenes, and then I kind of went off the trail, if I can use that expression, and I went into, you know, the corporate world, which sucked me in for 20 years, basically. But I never left my camera, and I devoted all my free time and all my resources into landscape photography. So once I was, you know, had a kind of a built portfolio, and I was, you know, kind of, I had the security that I was, had, you know, financial security for in one part, and photographic also. I really started to believe in my skills and the work that I was doing. I said, okay, listen, I'm gonna take this thing seriously. I'm gonna, you know, take a step down from this corporate world and travel the country for a year. So I made a portfolio of our national parks, the ones that had that you are able to visit as a tourist. And then when I finished, you know, it took me, you know, the most of 12 months to visit some of the locations that I was interested in. But when I finished, I, you know, started knocking on doors here in Bogota, and I ended up talking to the directora of the National Park System, and I said, listen, Julia, I have this portfolio. I don't believe anybody is working on expressive photography right now. I want to do a show, an exposición. an exposition, a show of my work in honor of the National Park System. So we did it in Galleria La Cometa. That was in November 2016. And I invited, of course, the National Park System and a bunch of other people, and among them was Benjamin Villegas, you know, from Villegas Editores. And, you know, he's probably the best book editor in town, or one of the best. And he said, I like your work very much. Why don't we continue doing this and we make it, you know, into a book? And he said, would you be interested? And I said, I'm going to have to think about it for maybe 1 second. And yes, of course, I'm interested. So we hooked up, and that's how the project, you know, came to be.
Cool, that's cool. So how does it feel to be the person who knows Colombia the best? Really? I mean, you might actually be that person.
I don't know if I'm that person, but you know, it's really the whole country, the whole country.
Fascinating.
And it feels awesome.
Really, really. I mean, you know, it's a privilege to talk to you. We'll get into the nitty gritty of some of the parks and some of the issues in a second in this next segment of the show. But really interesting to talk to you, and I hope. Wish you all the best of the
Thank
sales
you.
Of this book, the Parques Naturales, Nacionales Naturales de Colombia. If it weren't a mouthful, it wouldn't be Colombia. It's the truth. So that came out on the 20th of July. Check it out in bookstores. It'll be in all good bookstores around the country and hopefully internationally. We're talking to photographer Gabriel Eisenband, and check out the Facebook page and our Twitter, because he'll be. I'll link to his Instagram account so you can see some of his work there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Gabriel talking further about this book and Colombia. Don't go away. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 239. And those of you who've been listening thus far will know we're talking to photographer Gabriel Eisenband, a native of Barranquilla, and perhaps the guy who knows Colombia the best. I mean, it would be hard. It would be a hard challenge for anyone out there to say they know Colombia more than Gabriel. There may well be someone, and if there is, get in touch with me. But if not, we'll stick with Gabriel, because he's, you know, 42 national parks. I mean, who can really stake a claim to something like that? We've talked about the difficulties of photography. We've talked about some of the challenges of becoming a photographer. We've talked about, you know, you left the corporate world. This is, I mean, for someone like me, I love that kind of story. It means you kind of leave the dark side.
Yeah.
But those of us who have to stay in the corporate world, of course, you know, these things. But you have the benefit of being able to have found your passion and pursuing it. And so now this book was out 20th of July this year, Parques Nacionales Naturales de Colombia. We've linked to the Instagram account, your Facebook account, so hopefully we can drive you some more clientele. But I want to talk about tourism in Colombia, because you are uniquely placed, having seen so much of the country. In Costa Rica, they think of Colombia as the sleeping giant of ecotourism, and they are terrified of what could happen if Colombia becomes a completely tranquil place and tourism it grows exponentially, because they think it will just basically take away their nest egg, their GDP, tourism. Now, I don't know, there's a long way to go in Colombia, and of course, you know, there are a lot of national parks that you can't visit. The Nucac Reserve, which I wanted to get to because I did a story about the Nucac some years ago. I mean, these are difficult places. There are complications in Colombia. Have you run into any, let's say, complications as you are, or complicating groups as you are wandering around in these national parks? Have there been people who said, hey, we don't want you here?
Well, we've had a couple of experiences. Maybe one that was very frustrating, that was in a national park called Puinahuay. We went there. It's in a part of the country with that you know, the FARC group was very strong there, and, you know, the peace process, they had demobilized. So even the national park system had been absent from there for years. And it was the right opportunity to go. You know, I went with them after maybe 10 years of them being absent, you know, politically or administratively from the park. And it was a very, very long way to get there. It was, 3 days basically on boat. They needed that river. And there was one rapid that I really wanted to photograph. And once we got there, there was one guy from a community of, you know, the indigenous people that live there that had been kind of indoctrinated, you know, by the FARC. And, you know, he said, no, you guys can't come here. You guys can't visit that place unless you give me this amount of money. And we were like, well, we weren't prepared for this, so we're not able to give you this money right now. And he said, no, but, you know, you guys always come here and profit from us. That sort of speech, you know. So we couldn't do the job that we went there specifically to do. Of course, I photographed other parts of the park and another rapid that was really nice too. But that was the main one that I was looking for to get when I was there. And that was, you know, sad and frustrating. And you know, we were supposed to have access to that place, but, you know, the wrong man was there at the right time. He said, no, guys, you know, not on my watch. So that was, you know, the only frustrating experience I had along those lines. But basically, you know, the rest of my experience, we went to very sensible parts of the country. But, you know, when we had to deal with native communities, they kind of own the land that they live in, and, you know, we had to ask for their permission to go there, and we kind of knew that once they said yes, everything would be fine, because we were on their turf and on their guard, you know. And, pues, I'm not doing any political thing, I'm doing, you know, photography for the National Park System, so, you know, I never felt in danger. I knew there were eyes on some of the places, on us, on our team, but, you know, it was just like, watchdogs or people who went there just to see that we were doing what we said we were going to do. That's it.
I get the idea that, you know, you're asking permission, which is, I think, with these local communities, and especially indigenous communities, this is the most important thing. It might take some time, but you have to prepare for this. And of course, as you say, there are some eyes on you from whomever, but if you have the support of the local indigenous community, then you are protected.
Exactly.
Their land. Fascinating. And of course, the one guy there. Let's just clear up for some of my listeners. Brinaiwai, where is it? Exactly. Along the Inirida River.
Yes,
several days. So we're going towards Venezuela.
We're going towards the Amazon jungle, yeah. In border with Colombia, Venezuela, and Brazil.
It's far, man. I mean, this is far.
It's basically 3 days on a 6 to 12 hour journey.
And where do you leave from? Like San Jose de Guaviare or somewhere?
So
you
get we arrived at Puerto Inida.
Aha, uh-huh. So you flew all the way out. Yeah.
We fly from Puerto Inida, basically.
It's in Guainia.
Yeah, it's in Guainia.
Well, it's way out there.
It's way out.
How close were you to the border, let's say, when you're there? Because you're still not that close.
No, we're not that close.
Because when you get closer to borders is when you're going to encounter more problems, of course. These porous borders, Colombia, Venezuela, the rivers that cross them. That's where, you know, these are the main routes of communication.
Totally, but the borders are so wide.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a big border, Colombia, Venezuela, that, you know.
Yeah. But what interests me about this, you know, as you said, it was 10 years that the national parks didn't have any sort of representation, administrative, physical, anything else. It's just a national park in name only. I mean, it's fascinating that this could happen. You know, all right, we declare that a national park, but it's a free for all.
It's a free for all, Richard, and I think it's, you know, I see it a lot here, but I don't think it's only here. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, goodwill towards saying, let's protect this area here in this country, or let's protect this vast marine land in this country, that, you know. But the resources, you know, to keep illegal poaching and illegal mining and illegal farming and illegal logging, you know, it's very hard to implement. I mean, you don't need goodwill. Yeah. You need, you know, like real will and, you know, real resources being tested towards conservation.
Do you see that this is something the state will have to move towards, putting the military, let's say, to protecting these precious lands?
300%.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of laws that say, okay, this is a protected land and you cannot do this, this, and that. But to enforce them, that's, you know, that's the real deal.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? There's so much land out here. I was thinking about this, you know, and your wanderings around when I was thinking of this interview. And a week or so ago, the footage came out of this the final remaining member of a nomadic group in Brazil, and he was caught on camera out there. You didn't come across any nomadic groups in any of these things.
No,
you have no scoop to tell me about. But it's because it makes me think when you say, like, lots of people do that, lots of places have the same issues. Brazil, of course, has the same issues. Peru, of course. Ecuador, of course. But, you know, all of these countries do. It's very difficult.
I have friends in the United States, you know, and, you know, photographer friends, and they always say, you know, that the parks need more resources.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a first world country.
Yeah. I mean, all depends who's in charge, doesn't it? But let's not get into that. When we talk about tourism, though, I mean, tourism has to be a good thing for these national parks.
Totally.
Because, I mean, you still... Let's look at that park you were just at, out there in Guainia. It's still going to be a limited amount of people who get out there. The cost to get out there is high, to fly to Inirida. It's not a cheap flight with Satena all the way out there. It's not close, either. I mean, it's a good few hours flying out there, and it's not on, let's say, that first or second or even third wave of destinations in the country. So, you know, people talk about, oh, you know, the tourism could be damaging. Yes, but Colombia has this opportunity to promote tourism in these places and protect it, because there's everything to be done here. I still don't see, I mean, what could be the actual number of people per year? I mean, I'm not going to ask you to answer this, that go out to that national park in Guainia. It can't. I wouldn't even imagine it reaches 1,000. I doubt it.
No, I don't think it will reach 100.
Yeah, exactly. So when you sign in the book,
yeah,
you probably saw the last date before you, and it's another photographer or a famous bird watcher or something, you know, or an anthropologist or an environmentalist. I just don't. But really, you could. I mean, this country has so much, too much, I think. But let's talk about that. I mean. How in your mind could this be done? How do you think? I mean, should it be state-run tourism? Do you think there should be more control centrally over these things? It's very hard for me to envisage how the government and its resources, because again, you know, the first things first, you ask the government for resources, the first thing they're going to say is, we have no money. But they have to protect these. So I think we're just going down a cul-de-sac on that one. But let's talk about some of the other national parks. I mean, recently, I've been reading about national parks. One that has completely caught my imagination is the Catios National Park, which is up near to the Darien. So between sort of Panama, Colombia, and the isthmus there. You've been there. This was out of bounds for a long time.
Oh.
I mean, how was that? I mean, they tell me it's spectacular.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting place to go because of just what you just said. You know, you're entering you're going to somewhere that nobody goes, and it's, you know, a red line that you don't cross, and it's, you know, it's in the middle of where things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, that's an adventure that, you know, it thrills me to do. It thrills me to go to these kind of places. So basically, but it was, you know, very easy, and it's surprisingly, there were cabins, you know, with, you know, with towels and a clean bed with clean sheets, and you had a cook, and everything was so well organized that I was, you know, it presents like kind of a, okay, I'm hearing this in the news, but the reality, it's not what's in the news. The reality is much more, it's broader. You in the news, you need headlines, you know, you need to put things in little words. But the reality was to get in and out of there, of that vast, beautiful, humongous jungle.
Yeah.
Was super easy.
And when you've been excellent, when you've been traveling around, and I wanted to, let's talk about places like Cordoba, Antioquia. These places have been particularly affected by the last 50 odd years of conflict and so on. And one thing that worries me is the issue of illegal mining. Well, legal and illegal mining. You must have come across.
We came across illegal mining, but mostly in the jungle areas. We didn't get near, of course, the illegal camping sites, because that was a death sentence straight away. We kept off limits from, you know, those groups. But you know they are there, they know you are there, but what's really troubling is, you know, the amount of poison that is, you know, thrown into the rivers by this illegal activity.
Yeah.
And it's measured in the meat of the fish, the amount of mercury they have, and they are right now at alarming rate. I mean, like 20 or 30 times more than what it's supposed to be. So, you know, the destruction of the ecosystem is a very saddening thing, because that thing you don't see. You know, that thing you don't see, but the poison runs in the rivers, and the rivers are the banks of the earth. And we all need water to be clean, to survive. So that was a saddening thing.
I mean, that's what sort of upsets me, is because you can go out to these places and think that you're way out in the middle of nowhere and everything could be so clean and so special, and then you're eating a fish that has levels of mercury in it that are, you know, unseen even in industrial areas.
Totally, and that's why I think tourism is very, very important for Colombia. I hope the people managing the country, you know, open their eyes to it and do it wisely. I mean, Colombia only has 4 million tourists that visited last year. I think that was the number, compared to Mexico, 20 million. But only those 4 million tourists, you know, made, you know, left money, you know, more important than coffee, bananas, and flowers combined. So we are sitting in, you know, it can be very, very, very good for the country, and I hope it's going to be done and well done. Of course, there are going to be mistakes. There's nothing perfect anyway. Perfection doesn't exist. But I hope that's a road that we take. And for the, you know, the local farmers and the people living in rural areas, I mean, it's a source of income that I think it's more interesting, you know, than, you know, hunting animals or mining or chopping or logging or whatever.
Do you feel positive then?
I feel positive.
Okay, good.
There's going, you know, as I said, there's not going to be perfect, and there's going to be, you know, a lot of complications, but it's a road that we must, you know, build.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there'll be errors, and there'll be positives and negatives and so on. I mean, but again, there's so much to see and so much to do. Let's move back to your photography then, because this book, Parques Nacionales Naturales de Colombia, in bookstores now, in 42 national parks. What for you is the most, let's say, indicative and impacting photograph image that you have contributed to this book? The one that you say, this might be my life's work, this photograph.
Well, my life's work is that book. But there is definitely one photograph that is, you know, the preferida.
Yeah. Your preferred one, favorite.
My favorite one.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is a photo that I took of the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta. And that is just, for me, just perfect. It's like, it's a sunrise.
Yeah.
And it's a photo of the valleys that lie below the snowy peaks. And, of course, the snowy peaks are there. And it's just, you know, the lighting was perfect. And the clouds were so perfectly poised in the shot that, for me, is my favorite photo. And it's funny because when you look at it, or when I look at it at least, I see a faraway land, land of imagination, of endless possibilities, a land that's been there for millions of years. But the point that I took that picture from, a few meters, behind me was a TV post that controls, the TV signal for all of the Atlantic coast, with super high-end machines and, the latest technology. And in front of me, there's this wide and wild landscape. That kind of contrast.
Yeah. It's the incongruous nature of the world we live in. Exactly. You have your back to one of the most high-tech installations in the country, and then out front the most beautiful scenery.
Exactly.
So there's a story behind your favorite image there. I like it very much. So we'll be able to see this book. Obviously, it's in all bookstores now. This project is complete. What's the next project?
Well, I have a few projects in mind. I don't want to talk about them too much because they're still they're still inside the egg. And I have to still knock on a lot of doors to see if I can make them happen. But I have two dream projects. One is in the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta, and one is among the páramos here in the near Bogota. But you know how this is, you have to start knocking on doors until one eventually opens, hopefully.
Well, it will open, and obviously with this book under your belt, it opens you to a whole different reality as a photographer, because it's a signature, isn't it? So it's a signature book, the National Parks of Colombia. I don't even want to know what other countries has more than 60 national parks. They must exist, but equally so. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. We've been talking to Gabriel Eisenband, a photographer originally from Barranquilla, but here in the rainy altitude of Bogotá. He looks a bit like a fish out of water, but he lives here in Bogotá. His book, Parques Nacionales Naturales de Colombia, has been published by Villegas Editores. It's out in all good bookstores. Let me say thank you, and of course check out his Instagram feed for some of the images there that he takes. Very, very cool. I've seen it, and I'll do a quick call out here to Irvin Liz up in Wisconsin. Thank you for putting me in touch and letting me know about Gabriel. So, and Gabriel, thank you for agreeing for the interview.
Thank you, Richard. It was really nice to be here talking with you.
It's been a real pleasure. A good news story for Colombia. And check out the book, a great coffee table book, a great present for those of you needing to buy presents for your loved ones elsewhere to promote Colombia and promote the beauty of this quite remarkable country. This has been episode 239, talking to Gabriel Eisenband, the photographer. I've been Richard McCall. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next week for another interesting interview about Colombia. Bye-bye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.